The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Nicola Davis. Before you get started with this edition of Science Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian and get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
Turned every 2 hours like a joint of meat, basted with lotions, unmoving like a statue, mind filled with emotion, limbs dead to the touch, movement impossible.
Close your eyes and touch your nose. To most people, this is a simple task. And it's facilitated through something called proprioception.
Lying on a bed, eyes fixed on a flaking ceiling, wishing those flakes would turn to cracks and the ceiling fall to take me from this misery. What use an active brain without mobility?
A complex network of receptors in our skin and muscle provide constant feedback to our brain, allowing us to sense our body, its position and its movement through space. But what happens when this sixth sense disappears? What happens when we lose track of our place in the world?
The tale of his rare illness and unprecedented...
I'm Hannah Devlin.
I was astonished that he could walk at all.
This is Science Weekly.
And that he talked and had normal, relatively normal-looking movements. I'd assumed that he would be in a wheelchair.
Hello, Max.
How are you doing?
A little bit better now, thank you.
This is Ian Waterman, who lives in Dorset, where he runs a turkey farm. When he was 19 years old, he contracted a fever.
Well, I got the condition when I was just around 19 years old. At that time, I was working in the Channel Islands as a butcher. And normal, fit, healthy guy, not prone to illness or sickness or whatever. But one day, just felt tired, a bit flu-like, really. Spoke to a doctor and he recommended that I have some medication. And I went to go and get that. Got progressively tired very, very quickly. And in fact, when I picked up the stuff from the chemist, I sort of slid down the wall of the chemist waiting for the guy to pick me up and take me back to where I was staying. You know, within hours, it seemed to me that any semblance of strength and managing myself was sort of going. It all culminated the following day, really. I went back to my digs, got myself to bed, and the following day, my landlady came down and said, look, if you get yourself out of bed, I'll do your room up for you, you know. And I went to get out of bed and fell out of bed, and I fell against the radiator. But I couldn't unravel myself. I couldn't get myself back organised back onto the bed, and I just was there crumpled. About an hour later, I was in Jersey General Hospital, flat on my back, and I'd lost my proprioceptive ability. I didn't even know I had one. But there I was, I'd gone and lost it.
We'll come back to Ian's story, but before we do, we wanted to find out more about the biology of proprioception. We sent producer Max to find out more.
Fruit juice, cereal, toast, tea.
And for lunch?
Sandwich.
This Coffee. Is Jonathan Cole.
I'm a consultant in clinical neurophysiology and I'm also a professor at Bournemouth University.
We started by asking him how he defines proprioception.
Proprioception is usually considered to be the sensations of movement and position sense from the body. Charles Phillips, who was a professor in Oxford, didn't like the term proprioception because much of what we get from the body we're never aware of. So we move without being aware of the proprioceptive feedback that allows us to move. So he preferred to talk about sensations of movement and of touch. Charles Bell talked about the sixth sense of proprioception when he first described it in 1833. But in a way, much of proprioception isn't a sense because we don't perceive it. But without it, we're lost.
And so what are the neurological aspects of that make up proprioception? What do we have in our bodies or on our bodies? Okay,
so the main organs for proprioception are thought to be muscle spindles, which reside in the muscles themselves and tell us about stretch and tension within the muscle. And since the muscles are fixed to bones, they therefore tell us about where the limbs are in space. We also have Golgi tendon organs, which are in the tendons themselves. And we also have receptors in the skin, which tell us about proprioception. So proprioception, or position and movement, sensation and feedback in the face, is probably from the skin of the face. And we also get proprioceptive information from skin elsewhere on our bodies. But the main origin of proprioceptive feedback is probably from the muscle itself. And then they go through large myelinated sensory nerve fibres, which are the fastest ones, to the spinal cord and hence the brain, to coordinate movement. The only way I think that you can appreciate what proprioception does is by looking at people in whom it's lost.
Following his admission, Ian was transferred to a neurological hospital in Southampton.
It was there that I started to understand a little more about what the loss was and what its impact might be. And it was in the Neuro Centre in Southampton that I actually started the processes of learning how to manage what was left. Now, I had the mechanism that gave information on how I was sitting, how I was standing, how I was balancing, all these things that enabled me to manage in background subconsciously. All these things were going on and feeding, you know, the mechanisms I needed to keep me safe. All that had gone, but I found that if I visually, you know, if I watched visually everything I was doing, I could actually manage myself more safely. So my hands wouldn't fly off at a tangent or somewhere, and if I was looking in the opposite direction.
Eventually, Ian began to sense that the solution might lie in some hidden part of his mind. He had a hunch that if he could visualize a movement, he might, by sheer force of concentration, make his body perform it.
I remember tensing very, very much the tummy muscles and just sort of sitting up, and I would fold up in the middle and just never get anywhere. But after a lot of practice and a lot of effort, I actually learned this technique to just sort of like lift the head, move the shoulders forward and sit up. I remember vividly the first time I sat up, I was so euphoric, I lost all control and almost fell out the bed again because I just lost control about keeping the tummy muscles tight and all that sort of thing. And that simple act of sitting up in bed was the key to how movement was going to have to be if it was going to be controlled.
So I need to start to find ways of how to manage myself. And I find
And it's not just vision that Ian uses to help him get information about where his body is.
I equally used to use, in a big way, things like temperature. I mean, if you sit with your arms down by your side and you suddenly lift your arm up at 90 degrees to the body, you'll get a cool draft under your armpit, you know. And that, to me, is, well, that's a sensation that we all have. But very few people use it in the way that I do, which is an acknowledgement of moving. So I'm looking for clues from other things. Tight clothes would be another one. A tight jacket. If I felt that, you know, my jacket was suddenly tight for some reason, you know, then it would be because I'd moved in a way that I was not managing or controlling. So I'm hunting and looking for clues. And over a period of years, I built up a raft of things that I look for and that I manage, which we all get, but I just use them in a different way.
Ian gradually trained himself to control his movements and 12 years later came to the attention of Jonathan Cole.
In the middle 1980s, I was in Southampton as a research fellow and I was doing some work on tremor, testing patients, and a colleague rang me and said, I've got someone in outpatients who you might be interested to do a study on. And I turned up and it was Ian who'd stayed behind waiting for me. And I asked Ian what the problem was. And he told me, and I could hardly believe what he'd said, because he told me he had no perception of touch and he couldn't feel where his limbs were in space from the neck downwards. But there he was, sitting and moving, apparently pretty normally. Whereas everything I'd been taught suggests that if you have lost movement and position sense and touch, i.e. proprioception and touch, you wouldn't be able to move properly. So I was a bit nonplussed and thought, well, we'd better test out what the problem is.
When you looked at the test, what had happened neurologically? So obviously we've heard from Ian the subjective experience he had of having the fever and ending up in the hospital. What was going on inside his body?
When Ian had the problem, he had a viral diarrhea and the body formed white cells and an antibody against the diarrhea, which then in some way attacked his own cells. So he had an autoimmune reaction. And it just so happened that the cell bodies of the touch and proprioception nerve cells reside in something called the dorsal root ganglion, which sit just outside the spinal cord at each segment. And he'd raised a specific antibody to an antigen on the cells that are to do with light touch and proprioception, and no other cell.
With proprioception mostly carried out subconsciously, it's very hard to imagine experiencing the world without it.
I mean, when you wake up in the morning, you know, you need to know where everything is if you want to put your feet over the edge of the bed, get up and make yourself a cup of coffee. So when you did that this morning, you woke up, you sat up, you got on the edge of the bed and you walked off and you thought nothing about it. For me, that's a process that is fraught with issues that I have to encounter. I mean, first of all, I have to find out where I am in bed. So what I would do to do that is to put some power into the leg and hopefully it'll change from a warm position to a cold position. And by working out backwards, you know, how that feels and how long it took and where I think it might be, I can work out where I am in the bed. I could also lift the covers up and have a look down, I suppose. But it starts from that ground point one. I start managing where am I, how am I safe, and how can I manage the movement to sit up, how can I manage the movement to turn and sit over the edge of the bed. The interesting one would be, how do I manage from here to stand? No one ever told me, for example, that if you put your nose above your toes, you can lean forward slightly, push up on your leg, and you can stand up. I tried for months trying to stand up with the head in the wrong position. And that's something I would have learned as a child, but that was something that was lost when I lost my proprioception, the ability to balance easily without vision and cognitive effort.
It has now been 4 decades since Ian and Jonathan first met. And after this short break, we'll hear how Ian's story has changed the approach of one of the UK's leading dancers and choreographers.
I wish I had the words for explaining to anybody how valuable, how exquisitely valuable he has been. He brings me back to square one in the most creative way.
Hi, Ian Sample here. This episode of Science Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Off again, I wanted to recommend another of our podcasts here at The Guardian. It's called Chips with Everything and looks at all aspects of our digital lives. Next week, we'll be doing a very special episode in collaboration with them, so be sure to tune in. To listen, head over to theguardian.com/podcasts or download it on your podcast app. Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Hannah Devlin. Before the break, we met Ian Waterman, a man who had lost his proprioception and with it his sense of his own body.
I didn't even know I had one, but there I was, I'd gone and lost it.
Most of us take for granted the ability to sense our position and movement through space, from getting out of bed in the morning to reaching to shake someone's hand. And nowhere is proprioception more required than within the world of dance.
Then I don't have any other coffee.
This is Siobhan Davis.
I am a choreographer. I occasionally perform. And I'm the director of Siobhan Davis Studios, which is a studio in the Elephant and Castle, which welcomes the idea of dance being an investigative practice. Proprioception, we can take at whatever level an individual might want to. So from a dancer's point of view, it's hugely relevant where your body is in space and where parts of your body are in relationship to other parts of the body. Not only to make an image, you can make an image as a dancer. There are, in the classical vernacular, there are positions which are known in classical dance and you are striving to put your body in that position and very beautifully. In my area, it's more that we have this enormous movement knowledge, vocabulary. Every single one of us has a far larger potential of the subtleties and nuances of movement. And if, as a dance and choreographic artist, you're trying to use that as part of the resources that you can play with, then, of course, a very nuanced attitude towards proprioception is an enormous thing to deal with and an exciting thing to deal with.
And it was this fascination with the science of movement that brought the worlds of Siobhan, Jonathan and Ian together.
When I met Jonathan, which was about 10 years ago, we were at a couple of conferences together and we gravitated towards each other. And at some point, he must have said, because he's written lots of books, and one of those books is about Ian. And he just mentioned that he knew this man who had lost all sense of touch, all sense of knowing where he was in the world. And it impacted on me hugely because, again, I take for granted that I know where I am in the world, and I take for granted that I have hours of every day in which I can sort of work with that as an idea. And here is this man who can't do that to begin with, but has chosen to understand the nature of movement, I think, like nobody else has in the world. Very few people have the pathology that he has. And those others that do haven't found the ability to move in the same way as he does and be in the world and own a turkey farm and go round the world talking about his experiences. And he does. So personally, I think I find him inspirational. I find him an expert, a virtuoso in my field. And then he just laughs. He just thinks that's hysterically funny.
Ian's subjective experience of his condition has been central to Jonathan's approach as a scientist and a doctor. But how important is a more personalised approach in neurology?
He does all the technical, he does all the names, he knows all that's going on in background. That's great. I'm pleased that he does all that. I'm pleased there's someone out there that understands it all. But the most important thing is he looks at the impact on the individual. And that was different. That was something that I'd never experienced before. I hadn't had a health professional say, how does this impact on your life? You know, how do you manage? How do you cope? And, you know, that was very, very different.
I'm addicted to patients. I can't do without them. I need to have the feeling of these other lives which become a part of my own. Empathy isn't enough. I wish I could be in their shoes or know more exactly what it's like.
This kind of
when I first met Ian, I was as fascinated to do empirical experiments to look at movement and sensory loss. And we did lots of those, and we are doing lots of those, and continue to do them after 3-4 decades. But I also felt it was very important to understand what Ian as a person was going through. If you like, the biography of living with proprioceptive loss. And in those two books, that's what I focus on as well. That was important because, firstly, it turns out that Ian, who hated doctors, he probably wouldn't have done any empirical science if he'd viewed me purely as a scientist who wanted to dissect his condition and wasn't interested in his own subjective experience. But I ought to say, most scientists I've met who are doing their own little bit of research in relation to deafferentation or sensory loss are just as fascinated about just how Ian gets by as a person as they are about their own research. So you can't separate the human subjective experience from the more empirical science.
I found myself saying, is this all? Is this real life? I think in some sense I came to New York trying to find where the center lay, trying to find myself, trying to find reality. And I think I probably did find it when I started seeing patients.
In 1966, Sachs accepted a job at Beth Abraham
we,
Hospital.
We should try and understand the human condition more. You know, if we don't, we're a pretty shallow society, really. You know, and I think people like Oliver, you know, they get people to engage and infuse and become interested. It's important that people do try and understand. It's not because I want people to see me as some sort of like superhero, because I'm not that. You know, that I hate all that sort of side of it.
Sachs discovered at Beth Abraham and documented on his home movie camera.
The first sight was incredible. I saw motionless people like statues, often in strange postures.
I often get to think, I would never have been able to do that. You don't know. I hope you don't have to find out, but you don't know what you can do until you try.
Psychiatric back wards, I'd never seen such a thing. These people turned to stone. And some of them I found had been in the hospital for 30 or 40 years. One wondered at first what was going on inside these people, if they had an inside.
So next time you successfully manoeuvre around a dark room or fumble for keys in your pocket, think about that hidden sense, proprioception.
He talked for about 30 seconds, and then he froze up again. But in that 30 seconds, you know, a whole personality and something of a human life.
Special thanks this week to the Wellcome Collection and to Siobhan Davis-Dance. To find out more about the company and their upcoming projects, including their show at the Barbican next year, head over to www.siobhandavis.com.
I have a need to look at people who've, perhaps through no fault of their own, through biological chance, have been thrust out of the mainstream, and in general to see the tremendous adaptability of the human organism and the human spirit in extreme situations.
I'm Hannah Devlin. This is Science Weekly.